You're listening to Okay Now Listen, a bi-weekly show where we chat about what's on our minds, what we're binging, and what's blowing up our timelines. I'm Scotty Beam. I'm a media personality, content creator, music enthusiast, and wing connoisseur.
And I'm Sylvia Obel. I'm a culture writer, host, producer, and lover of Beyonce.
My Sylvia, oh Sylvia. First of all, you look beautiful today.
Thank you, Scotty.
You look so pretty.
I've been going
through. How are you feeling this week?
Well, you know, I must have rehearsed my lines 1,000 times.
1,000 times?
But they never seem to come out right. But when, you know what I mean? If only you knew, how much I got my life from the versus battle between Gladys Knight and Patti LaBelle, because that's how I'm doing. It really just set the tone. It was the spiritual healing and cleansing I needed to start a new week. And I literally think my auntie powers are fully charged. We're at an all-time high right now. I literally have zero fucks about me. I literally have cursed out at least 3 or 4 of my nephews and nieces in my mind. I just feel like, you know, our moon has risen. Like, we are in auntie season. Like, it's a zodiac sign. Like, auntie's in retrograde. Like, I don't know what it's called, but that's where I'm at.
It was the warmest hug for me, because I think, you know, a lot of us are missing our grandparents too. A lot of us are missing our elders and our family, our ancestors. And it was so just spiritual, like, for me,
because I
love this type of music too. 70s and early 80s is my shit.
Yes.
I live by it. I'm sticking to it. I will forever be embedded in the 70s and 80s music culture, period. Like, I fucking love it, especially disco. Don't ever come for disco's head. I will come for yours.
Yes.
Now, I was in love with the sisterhood between Gladys and Patti LaBelle, because it was genuine. You can tell that it was genuine and it was nurtured.
Yeah.
It's something that they spent years doing, you know, spent years talking to each other and being, you know, kind to each other and loving on each other. And I loved that about the Versus challenge, even though they didn't even know, I'm pretty sure they don't even know what the fuck was happening. What was going on? Was it a competition? Absolutely not.
Not like a celebration.
It was none of those things. Yeah, it was definitely a celebration. I love that they were singing from their chair. Your fave could fucking never, ever in life, not a person right now, I don't care,
out singing your fave, out singing them. From the chair, casually,
legs crossed, the diaphragm is folded. You hear me? The diaphragm already knows what to do. And they were singing. Gladys came, and also, for those who tried to play in Gladys Knight's face, don't ever.
Don't
and
do
because
it.
You don't know the music, you could have done your research, do your Googles, and knew that this woman has been singing since Jesus was a boy. There's no, like, she does this for real. She does not play. Like,
Jesus was a boy.
Jesus was a boy. And she does not play. She does not joke when it comes to those vocal skills.
Gladys came in hot. Like, she was hitting the notes early. You know what I mean? I was like, okay, Gladys is singing her casually out, singing your fave from her chair at 77. Like, what is life? Get your health together, all of that. Patti sang "If Only You Knew" from her seat. She literally hit that "if" from her seat, from her chair. I just want us to talk. Like, this is why that music will always be revered. That time period will be revered for what it was, which was bitches who could sing, and that you weren't getting by. If you could not, I don't care how cute you were. I don't care how many Instagram.
Well, was getting by. Honey.
Well, I mean, like,
Diana was getting by.
Well, honey. We're not gonna do some this. No,
we were getting.
No, I know. I know you're right. That's one of those black things, but that we don't say in front of company.
No, well, what company? Listen, if they're listening to us now, they are family. They know about us. We are on the what episode?
So yeah, you're right. The white folks listening.
Oh, white folks can't talk about shit. But first of all, if the whites are listening, hi, you're just here listening in. I seriously don't ever think about that.
I know.
I was just, you know, I do believe that this was a time period where you had to give your all, no matter what.
There you go. That's
whatever you had, you gave your best.
Right.
And you looked your best. You were always at your best. Mm. And so I think, you know, Gladys and Patty are like
legends,
fucking
icons,
legends, the icons, the visionaries. They were the styles. Like,
the voice.
I took some time just to look at Patti LaBelle's, you know, evolution. The evolution of Patti.
The wigs!
And the wigs, you know, the styles. I really had a good time. I was dancing in front of my TV the whole time when Dionne Warwick came out.
Ooh, they pulled out Dionne.
New Jersey's own.
New Jersey's own! What?
Sis came out. She said she was 80?
She said she's 80, yeah.
She's 80 years old, harmonizing again. With the best of them.
And they say, when so they say Superwoman, child, I thought I levitated.
Oh, Lord. Lord. They perform. They are entertainers.
They are entertainers. And what
that
I was.
That is what you come to entertain.
And what I loved is that they gave me what I came for. Like, they knew what we wanted. They gave us the class. They didn't turn the Ciroc bucket into a bouquet of flowers. They didn't have chandeliers in the back. You know, Patty brought the props because she knows she's the extra auntie. She knows she's the extra auntie. So she had her Louis Vuitton suitcases that nobody asked her to bring as her side table. Mm-hmm. She had multiple pairs of shoes. Did you catch the shoe change? When she kicked off the heels.
Well, of course, because when she was singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow, it was expected that she was going to fly away. That's first. You had to fly away and that you had to kick off your shoes.
Consider me Prince at the BET Awards special with the shoe in there, caught the shoe in the air, held it. Because that's how I felt by the end of that damn Versus child. Because let me tell you something. I'm going to tell you my two favorite moments. When they went from Neither One of Us to Somebody Loves You, Baby, the back-to-back, I almost had a heart attack. I said, how you gonna hit us with a doubleheader like that?
I was singing like I was employed by Gladys Knight herself.
To do backup.
She was like, sis, can you just be Pip? Be one of the Pips.
One of the Pips.
And I said, I got you, sis. Don't you worry. I was sweating, Sylvia. Like, I took the phone down. If you notice, my timestamps are off because I had took a whole break to get up and sing the whole song because that is my song. Even my mom knew that it was my song. She wasn't home with me, but she had tweeted, wrote a comment in the IG Live that was like, I hear my daughter singing all the way from here because that's how hard
neither one
I
of
go
us.
For neither one of us.
A it's breakup a great, song. A break
great breakup
up song, child.
And they don't even break up at the end. Like
that's why it's
like,
real.
Farewell, my love, but like,
neither one of us.
I was going.
You were doing.
Hard.
You were
dance
doing
moves.
The echo. Neither one of us for her.
Yeah. When she goes, farewell, my love.
Farewell.
And I was goodbye. Goodbye.
And you got to do the choreography with it.
Did the whole thing. That's my jam.
I just want to say thank you to the aunties for giving us Auntie Chella. And I just really feel like versus the bar has been raised because if these two women in their 70s can get up there and sing live regularly, I don't want to see another R&B singer compete in this competition unless you're going to hit me with some live vocals as well. Because you have no excuse. You have no excuse. You also no longer have an excuse to think you're too good for versus, which is really what this did. Because now the bar of who's like, oh, this is below me, or oh, they're too big for this. If Patty and Gladys did it, the doors of the church are open. Like,
I have to accept that there are people that cannot and will not ever measure up to the legends that are Patty and Gladys. Shit. First of all, versus now, I don't even want new people anymore. I don't want nobody
want
after
people.
1980.
Oh, no.
I need
How about the
everyone. 90s?
Give I was us the 90s. Saying, allow the 90s.
Okay, so the 90s. I want Janet Jackson. I want everyone there.
Yeah.
I'm good after 99. I'm good after 99, but I have a sentimental tie to Gladys Knight's best thing that ever happened to me. It makes me think of my grandmother. Aww. It makes me think of my mother, especially the lyrics, you know, because she says, like, you know, if ever they were to write my story, you know, that you would be in it and you would be the best thing that ever happened to me. And I don't know who she's talking about, but for me, it would be my mother and my grandmother.
That's beautiful. So
I think I love that song, and my mom also loves that song, and I think that's something that we share together. We sing to each other. So I was crying. I'm not even gonna lie to y'all, mm-hmm. right now, here live on OK Now Listen, I was crying. I was trying not to look crazy, because, you know, my boyfriend would be like, "The hell is wrong with you?" But I was tearing up, because I was like, you know, this is something.
It was beautiful.
We need to realize that we won't have anymore.
Mm.
You know, we'll have the music forever, absolutely. But moments like this, we will not have anymore. Like, everybody's on borrowed time.
Yes.
So why not make the most of it and do things like this, you know what I'm saying, for the world to see and for you to see.
Yeah.
So, you know, when they hugged each other, when they said, signed off and said goodbye, I was a mess, because, you know, I love those women.
Yeah.
And the fact that these women wanted to do it,
yeah,
is something special and makes me feel worthy. And I love that. I love that, especially from Patti LaBelle and Gladys Knight.
Mm.
There is no, they're literally, what they can give me, I don't know, but they filled my heart so full.
My cup runneth over.
So yes, that plus my black sitcom binges really have been getting me through it, because this weekend, Sylvia, all I did was sit in my bed and watch Girlfriends. That's all I did. I ate and just watch Girlfriends. I'm on season 3 now, child.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited. Honestly, I have loved being able to watch all these black ass shows. I just feel so seen by so many of these characters and these storylines. Like, the fact that I'm still haven't finished Moesha, because Lord knows there was a million seasons of that. And yes. I still got Sister, yes. Sister, because there's a million seasons of that. And now I'm bringing Girlfriends into it. I'm overwhelmed in the best way.
I'm doing Sister Sisters in the morning and Girlfriends at night.
So you, I'm got a schedule.
Let's talk about it. I got a schedule. Let's talk about it.
Okay, so we definitely have spent the past few episodes talking about some of these black sitcoms like Moesha, The Game, and as of this past week, Girlfriends.
And you know what all these shows have in common, Sylvia.
What's that? What's that, Scotty?
Motherfucking Mara Brock Akil. That's who.
Hello. The baddest.
The queen, the visionary, the legend.
You are absolutely right, because Mara has literally had her hand in so many of these black shows I love as a black woman. She has really been the architect of the representation I've seen in myself on TV. You want to talk about a visionary? She literally, ooh, when I think about the black women, literally from Moesha to Girlfriends to being Mary Jane to The Game, like, she's literally given me so many of my favorite strong black leads. You like what I did there? Mm-hmm. So
I love it so much.
So, like, I literally, it's hard for me to honestly pick even favorites, because I really love so much of her work. But I have to say, personally, when it comes to the representation that Mara has given us, what has truly impacted me the most is Girlfriends, which is why I'm so glad it's on Netflix, so that everybody can remember all the references I be making, Scotty, because I literally...
Oh, my God.
I am so glad that Sylvia, you are on it and loving it, because I told you this shit is the truth.
I knew it was the truth. I just did not remember. I had no idea. Like, I was 10. When this came out. So there was no way that I'm remembering any of this, especially me at 10. Me at 10 is completely different from now.
But I think it's like, I feel like I grew up with it, because like, it started when we were 10, but like, we were 17 by the time it ended. So I kind of did feel like these were the women who shaped what I thought, like what I was like gonna expect. You know what I mean? Like, I guess that's how I felt as a teenager. Like, oh, that's the next stage. Like, I'm at the end of my teens. They're at the end of their 20s going into their 30s. Like, what's that going to be like? You know what I mean? Like, I felt like I was, like, listening to cool aunties and kind of seeing what my future was going to be and, like, what kind of bullshit to come that was coming my way or whatever else. But, like, But I think honestly what I love the most and what it gave me is just really just the foundation and how much your girlfriends can be the loves of your life and can be the foundational source
your soulmates.
Of like your soulmates.
Your soulmates.
And the representation she gave us of Black friendship on TV, like Living Single definitely laid the foundation for girlfriends. But I do feel like because I was so young when Living Single came out and it wasn't yet on the streaming reruns that we can enjoy now, like, girlfriends for me was like, oh, okay, like, it's all women. I mean, William was there, whatever. But, like, I do feel like it was very much like, it showed how not easy friendship is and how you have to still work around that and even how different personalities come together and, like, some of that shit is toxic. I ain't gonna lie. Tony's selfishness.
Super.
Like,
super.
But.
Super.
And Scotty will tell you this. I am a Joan. I am very much a
you
Joan.
You are severely a Joan. First of all, I'm seeing it now. I'm on season 3 and I'm like, this is Sylvia. Oh my God. This is every time she says something. I'm like, oh my God, that's Sylvia. It's Sylvia and a few other friends I have. I'm like, oh my gosh, look at them. Look at these girls. I see them. So it's interesting to see because I think, again, younger me, 10 to 17, was a different girl. Mm. I was a tomboy who was into sports.
Yeah.
Who really didn't pay much attention to things that are on the television because I didn't feel seen anyway. So I gave up on that a long time ago. Unless it was like, I don't know. I don't even think I was watching TV like that, honestly. I never got to see that, but me now as a woman watching
Woman's
Girlfriends,
a woman.
My God, I'm like, oh my God, this is our life.
Cause we're
like,
literally their age now.
We're living it right now. So I was, when Joan was going through all the things, like at 30, when she was turning 29 and she was losing her shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 30, she was like, I haven't done all these things. Like, I need to do these things. She thought she would need to be a nudist. She got to get on the beach and do something wild. And
right.
They were playing Never Have I Ever and she's never done anything. So
wow, triggered me.
Yeah, so, you know, stuff like that. I was like, wow, this is definitely what we're going through, what I'm going through right now. I felt seen now, which is important. Incredible that, like, TV is timeless too.
That Mara's like, script, really Mara's
that.
Impact,
Mara's,
like
Mara's
her
writing,
is, her
the
writing
pen
is.
Game,
strong.
The pen game, strong. You hear me? She got the yopper on her, the chopper. Hold up, wait a minute. It's a 22 with that motherfucking pen.
I'm about to fight you,
Mara. Girl,
hold up, wait
that
a
was
minute.
A good,
it's
and
a
it's, and it was great. It's great so far. Like, I'm really enjoying myself.
I'm so glad. Like, I'm not deep into my binge yet because I just got my Wi-Fi and cable cut on in my new apartment.
Okay.
So now we in it though. I'm about to be like, I'm now about to be able to do this at the pace I want to. And I am excited to relive this as a 30-year-old woman and just see my friends in the situation. But I do, it's like a warm hug because it's like, wow, like, it's kind of like, okay, I can, when I watch these episodes, I can remember thinking what I thought I would be like by that age. And now I can see, like, where I am at. And I kind of like that it's like, I'm able to have that recollection through the show in that way. And then, like, even just seeing, like, oh, I do have my Maya and my Lynn and my Tony. And I didn't know if I was going to have those growing up. You know what I mean? At that point, yeah. And, like, these women have been there more for me than these niggas. Wow, Mara knew. You know what I mean? I mean, at least more consistently.
Right.
You know, I used to watch Joan and be like, wow, she's a successful Black woman at 30. Can I do that? And it's like, I literally, it's not a house. I didn't have grandparents that left me a house, which is how Joan got her house, for the love of God,
yes.
Twitter. My yes. fucking God. Y'all love to ask an irrelevant question. Like, y'all love to
But don't have no motherfucking questions for that white woman on fucking Sex in the City.
They got,
that's
listen,
my confusion.
Listen, Joan's grandparents gave
What's
her the
name?
House.
What's Sarah Jessica Parker's name?
Carrie
Bradshaw.
I really don't know white women.
I watched all of it. And that's the other thing. I watched Sex and the City. And this came, like, Girlfriends kind of came after Sex and the City. Like, I think they maybe overlapped for a hot minute. But, like, I loved that we got this shit. Because I used to watch my mom and her friends watch Sex and the City and be like, damn, they don't got no black women to watch. You know what I mean? That 11 singles over. And then Friends had come in between that time, too. So it really was needed because, like, we had kind of, like, lost that black friendship tribe shit that was going on there. And it showed that we contain multitudes. It showed the diversity within diversity of black women. Like, I don't even think we had ever gotten to see a black woman like Lynn on TV before mm-hmm. Girlfriends, mm-hmm. specifically, like, just this bohemian, hippie, biracial, like, student loans up to her ass, like, you know what I mean? Super smart, but very free-spirited. Like, you usually don't get to be both.
Yeah.
Girlfriends, for me, honestly, is the Mara show. I saw so much of myself and what I thought would be my future in it. And I am so, it's also just really nice to look back now and be like, wow, so I did get to do some of these things. Like, I am moving into my own place and I have these things and I am trying to figure out how to have the next version of that like these women are. And I just kind of feel seen and just understood is the real thing there. I feel understood by these shows. And that's what means the most to me about it. What Mara show and or character made you feel that way the most?
I would have to say, and this is an older one, but this is Being Mary Jane for me. And yes, a lot of it is not me because, you know, I was not sleeping with a married man, you know, all that
just,
stuff like that.
Just to be clear. I'm not classist like Joan either, just to be clear. Like, we just see parts of ourselves. Yeah.
But there are parts of Mary Jane that I think I see myself and that's the work ethic. So it came out in 2014. I was 24 years old and I still was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I knew where I wanted to be. I just had to figure out how I was going to do it. That's a better way of saying it. Her work ethic for me was where I saw myself and where I wanted to be. You know, how hard she worked. I was like, I need to be that dedicated. And also her leaving motivating, like, quotes on her wall, on her mirror, stuff like that. I do that a lot. And I never thought in 1,000,000,000,000 years that people do shit like that. I did it often. And around that time, too, I was living in a house that was not mine. I was in an apartment that was not mine. So I kept those notes, like, in my notebook or, you know, would write it down on my phone or stuff like that. And whenever I felt really low, I would go back to those notes and just read them over and over again. She also never let them see her sweat. Like, professionally, she could be going through some shit. And she was going through some shit.
Right.
But she never took that
into camera came on.
Her job. When that camera came on, when that mic is hot, she did her thing. And that's what I loved most about being Mary Jane, too. I love that. Like, I love it. I love the professionalism, period, when it comes to, like, shutting out the world and doing what you love, you know?
Right.
Yes, it's a mess in the back. And I know that you're not expecting, you know, yes, we're not perfect. But right here, where I want to be, my passion, what I love to do, this is going to be my number one priority right now.
Yeah.
And I love that about Mary Jane. So, yeah, that's what I loved. I aspired to be.
And she had Michael Ealy in her bed at one point, which is very aspirational.
And now you know that's why. Also, I saw myself.
We learned a few episodes ago how you feel about Fuck Them Kids, Michael Ealy.
Okay. Hello. Shit.
I can't remember. Did she end up with him or did she turn down his
engagement? Married him.
She
married him.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Remember the last, what was it, a movie? It was a Mary Jane movie?
Oh, yes, it was the movie. Okay, yes. Thank you. That's why I was getting confused about it, child. Yeah. Thank God, child. At the end of your struggle storm, she started the season sleeping with a married Amari Hardwick, but ended the series with Michael Ealy as her husband.
Michael
motherfucking
Ealy.
If that ain't a testimony.
It does not get better.
For what growth can do for your life.
Oh, man.
You may think you're in the darkness now, sis, the wilderness.
Sis, but trust me, but Michael you too Ealy can comes marry in the morning. A Michael Ealy. Hello. Because, child, she was going through it. She had her moments. But, yeah, I enjoyed that show very much. It was written very well.
Yeah, Mara is definitely the gift that keeps on giving. I'm thankful for her life, her and her pen.
You know, Sylvia, I think it's time we give Mara Brockakill her flowers. What do you think?
I could not agree more, Scotty. And I am so honored that we were able to chat with Mara and do just that. I still can't believe we even got to have such a sister soul auntie session with our Shiro. I'm still pinching myself.
Today, we welcome the blueprint.
Mm.
A woman who sets and raises the bar, whether it's breathing life into these networks or giving Black girls and women the opportunity to feel seen on their television.
Yes.
Screenwriter, producer, creator, Mara Brockakill. Oh my God, I can't believe it.
Woo, we are not worthy.
Oh yeah. And like Sylvia says, our co-worker.
Our new co-worker. Because listen, I'm writing that in my Twitter. That's the new Twitter bio for this week's episode. Mara Brockakill is our co-worker. Like, we are excited co-worker. About it. Okay? They have given Mara the keys to the kingdom. And we are just happy, happy, happy that Netflix made the right choice, the smart choice, to bring Mara aboard.
I'm happy they did too, ladies. Thank you for that beautiful introduction. I mean, come on. Who doesn't? I mean, that was spirit-filled. Thank you. I'll take that every day.
I appreciate that. I love you so
Scotty's
much.
Scotty's great at that. We do it from the heart. But so let's just jump right into it. This month marks the 20th anniversary of your classic television series, Girlfriends.
Oh my gosh.
And the series in all of its entirety is now on Netflix. Congratulations. How does it feel?
It feels amazing. It feels like Christmas. I to be honest, I kind of gave up that this was going to happen when all the other shows were streaming on the various platforms. I was like, hello, what about Girlfriends? What about the game? Y'all, come on. And it just didn't seem to happen. And I didn't understand why. And so then I had to let go so I can receive more, you know, to open myself up so I can do more work, right? And the blessing and alignment. We plan and God plans. And God is the best planner because I did not see this coming.
Hey.
When I was over there making an overall deal, who knew on the other side of the mothership this blessing was happening. And the alignment of it is nothing but God. I'm in awe that tomorrow would mark literally 20 years to the day that Girlfriends, that my life changed.
Wow.
And like as you ladies said, y'all's life changed.
I mean, yeah. Listen, I haven't been the same since. And it's like, it's insane that how, I think it speaks to the quality of the show and the quality of your work that it still resonates across generations. Like, we were teenagers, you know, we were teenagers like when
y'all should have been in bed. That's what
I know. We ain't had no business in grown folk business, but we was in there. We was in there. And I'm just so excited to rewatch it now that I'm the age of Joan, Tony, Lynn, and Maya, you know what I mean? And it's still that show to us. And I just wanted to get your opinion on why do you think that show still means so much? And like, why do you think that it still fills such a hole that like we're all still so thirsty for?
Well, it's clear to me, I think, because I built the characters as human beings. The whole goal of the show, or one of the goals, is I wanted our humanity to be seen. I wanted the breadth of who we are, you know, from the ratchet to the righteous to, you know what I'm saying, to the to our
to
success.
The bougie.
Yeah, to the bougie, to the, you know, eating ramen, to the eating too much sushi. All of it. I wanted all of us in there, all of who we are. I think I think a lot of artists are political in a sense. And my politics is I want Black people to be seen as human. And I want us for ourselves, number one, and then for the greater society so that we can have space in the world to be who we are and be great and be who, you know, and not, you know, sometimes this, you know, what was it? Respectability politics. You know, we've spent so much of our life trying to be something else, and I want us to be who we are, and who we are is good enough. We are human, we are all those things. So I think the characters resonate because they were built with care, they were built with quality, they were built with having real human aspects to them, not selling out on the stereotypes just to get a show on. I'm really blessed to have had the space to tell these stories. And I'm really thankful that there's an audience because, you know, as an artist, you need an audience to have a conversation, and that what was put into it was felt and received. And each year, you know, that the, you know, when people, the word of mouth, because at the time, that's all girlfriends really had. We didn't have any billboards. We didn't have any campaigns. Mm. It really spoke to the viewer and the viewers. So I'm thankful to the viewers because the loyal fans have been there day one, been spreading the word, whatever network it's going to pop up on, wherever it shows up. But to be on Netflix, where the, you know, to be on the biggest streamer in the world, to be there, and people, they know how to use it. They know they already have a, hopefully they already have a subscription or they're getting one. So they can just binge it, have a good time, check out for a minute, have some laughs, be reminded of their humanity is huge for me. And Girlfriends was started on UPN when they thought the network was gonna cancel every week. The network, not the show. They thought the network wasn't going to be around. And to create under those conditions and know that it had a place in the world, and then for it to be 20 years later still relevant on this major platform is amazing. And so I'm thankful.
Yeah. And so you touched on something that, like, I've really wanted to talk to you about, which is I love that you made the point to talk about how you made flawed characters, human characters, characters who were not following respectability politics, because I do feel like as Black women, especially when the journey from when Girlfriends was on, and even when Being Mary Jane was on, we were used that we had to be kind of perfect to be something digestible for the mainstream public. And you've made a lot. I've thought about each of the Black women main characters in the shows you've created, whether it's Melanie Barnett or, you know, Joan, Tony, Lynn, and Maya, or Mary Jane, Nori, like all of these characters, they're not perfect. They make questions. They're not always even likable. And they make a lot of questionable choices. And I want to talk to you, you know, like, what was the decision that went into developing flawed Black women and flawed Black friendships and flawed Black love? Like, I'm thinking about even like Joan and Tony and the their friendship and where it went. And, you know, people are about to experience that now grown. Like, dang, would I be okay with my friend doing this to me? Or even like, you know, there's a lot of talk on Twitter about the game with Melanie and Derwin and, like, you know, the decision for her to keeping him, you know? So like talk to us, because I think the people want to know, like, what your intentions were with these situations.
I think when I entered into, you know, to your point, I think there's still this pressure for Black people to be perfect, not just on television, but in life, in order for us to be, to stay alive in one survival case. Yeah. Or to just be accepted. And I don't believe that. I think that, you know, I believe that I'm human, I'm here, and I deserve to be here, flawed and all. And so if I want that for myself, I want that for my people. So that is reflected in my art. And so one of the things that I really believe and write to is this idea that I don't believe in positive images or negative images. Positive images can be just as damaging as what people think negative images are, because perfection is not real. It's not possible. So then why do we have Black people running a fool's errand trying to be perfect, as opposed to being themselves, spending that time and energy and asking, who are you? And the things that our parents or our grandparents are putting on us, are those ours? Is that for us? We need to make space for who we are. And I mean, sometimes we can't always carry the burden or the baggage, one would say, even of our own families. We have to heal those things. We need space for those things. And so being flawed, making your own way, taking the values of your family, yes, but being able to make the choices for you, whether it be in the way you identify, as you identify, what your sexual preference is, what your job is, what your life looks like. We deserve that. We're owed that. Meanwhile, we're still fighting for our humanity, right? So
right.
By putting all of these issues in there, I think it helps us to reflect on who you are. Like you said, some of the characters aren't likable. Well, that's a mirror and a gauge for you, the viewer. Are you that way? Number one. And two, if someone's in your life that way, can you still love them and make space for them? If you can make love and space for Mary Jane, then you can certainly maybe sort of look at, you can look at some of your other friends and sort of try to understand them. You know what I'm saying? Or I didn't see it that way. Or more importantly, yourself. You know, I think one of the things I was even trying to, you know, talk about in that show was, it's interesting how Black women sort of put a lot of the burden on themselves to think if it wasn't for them, it would all fall apart. And I think I'm trying to say, no, Black women, that's not true. We also need to start taking care of ourselves before we always try to take care of everybody else. With girlfriends, it was about can we have it all? You know, and you see Joan was running around about to kill herself. Mm-hmm. Have it all.
Relatable.
Yeah. But anyway. But thank God there was a safe place, the support group, as flawed and wonderful as it is. She had a safe place to land. So did Tony have a safe place to land. So did Lynn. So did Maya. And that's what we need also in our human experience, is a safe place to land and be.
Somebody asked me a few days ago, what dream did I recently have to let go of? And I had said that it was the dream of others, of my families, of my mothers, of, you know, my ancestors, even the people who came before me. Those dreams were placed on my back because they weren't able to, you know, see it. And I get that. And I know that we have to carry that with us all the way. But I wanted to know, when did you start to get to that place where you said, okay, I have to let go of these dreams of others, like that people placed on me, not my own? I didn't even start to think of my own. When did you start to actually say, okay, what does my dream look like?
Honestly, I've been thinking about it throughout my life. But to your point, it was as significant as it is to my career and girlfriends. There was a point in which I went to Northwestern. I went to become a journalist. I went to journalism school, the best. And I really was going down that path. And people thought plan B would be advertising, which, okay, she's going to come right out of school, going to Chicago. And I literally had that job offer. And then I was like, something told me if I take this job, by this time I wrote my first screenplay and it was horrible, but it was the joy of my life. And I just remembered that feeling that I love that process and being with those characters more than I loved like the guys that I was dating. And that actually woke me up and I had to pay attention to that feeling. Anyway, no job prospects in that. And that was the first time I had to learn and how to tell my family what my dreams were. The second step, they're like, okay. So then it became a math problem. I became a manager at The Gap just to be able to hold my own, like pay the rent. Like just like a math problem that I can take care of myself. Mommy, if you just kick me down with some car insurance, we'd be good. You know, like that's like that. But that wasn't sustainable with a Northwestern degree. And I had to figure out how can I help them invest, not necessarily more money, but invest in believing in me. You know what I'm saying? Because dreams, sometimes you need that, because you sometimes fall out of your own belief. You need support, that support system. Long story short, it was getting tight. And I'm raised by a family of educators. And so they were starting to send me job applications and postings about teaching and all these other things. And I got really mad at them because I didn't think people believed in me. And what I realized one day in stillness and in prayer, I heard this voice say, they believe in you, they don't know how to help you. And that's important. I think that would be important to know, that our families do believe in us. They don't know how to help us. They don't have anybody they can call in Hollywood to say, look after my baby. They could call all of LAUSD and I could have a teaching job tomorrow. You know what I'm saying? On a track to be the principal probably, and a great life. But they couldn't help me in Hollywood. I was on my own. And when I forgave them, then I was able to tell them how they could help me. Grandma, can you feed me every Sunday? And can I come over and wash clothes? And those conversations gave me a place just to land and think. And so I can keep dreaming and plotting and planning the dream. And that sometimes is the support system that we need, just so that we have enough space to go after that job. And then I got on the Sinbad show. And once I got on the Sinbad show, you meet Debbie Allen, you meet Ralph Farquhar, you meet all these amazing people. And then I'm on South Central, and then I'm working on Moesha. You know what I'm saying? Then 25 years old, I'm on Moesha because I had that kind of support. And I think I do think the shift was me. So thank you for asking, because I forgot about that. And I think it was one of my big moments in my journey of success, was forgiving them in the spirit of them not thinking they're not supportive, but they, and letting their dreams go and going for mine.
And speaking of confidence, you've talked about pushing to get that showrunner credit for season 3 of Girlfriends, and being ready to walk if it didn't happen. How did you find that courage as a Black woman to hold your ground on that? And also, what should compromise look like for a Black woman in Hollywood?
Early on, I met Kenan Ivory Wayans in this business, like when I was like way before the showrunner status. And I remember one thing he said that caught my attention. I always stuck with it. And he was like, understand the power of no. And so part of that power was putting myself in a position to walk away. So money is important. How you manage money is a very important thing. So my ability to say no and be willing to walk away was my my management of money, and to be quite honest, which I will also attribute to my mother and my grandmother. They taught me that, those values, those things helped me in a way. So when Hollywood thinks they got you, and sometimes, you know, you spend in above your means, you can't say no. I didn't have children at the time. I have a very supportive husband at the time. I mean, it's still, and I had to decide what was more important to me. And I also understood, when you talk about compromise, I also understood the show, like, know who you are in the moment. And I also know the show was successful and that it was making money for the network. It was successful for them. I knew that I was the key to that success. And I had to figure a way of how to help them see that. And so there was a moment where, you know, they needed me, and I still needed them, but they needed me if they wanted that show to be successful and hold that slot. And so I rolled the dice on faith. But then sometimes when you win, you know, also this deck is stacked against you, but I'm like Kobe, I'm like LeBron, I'm like all of them. Give me the ball. I want the ball. I'm going to take the shot. I'm like Damian Lillard. I want the shot. Give me the shot.
Right. Because a lot of women in our industry, Black women in our industry, period, just don't know whether to compromise or what compromise looks like anymore, because it's like, am I like throwing it all away? Am I doing this right? Am I
like compromising making a bad right? Am I negotiating? Decision.
Right.
Yeah.
Me walking out, is that me being an angry Black woman now? Like, I don't know.
And then they also gaslight so many of us to feel like we don't have the keys. Like, we won't make the show. Like, we aren't key. Like, you knowing that you were key to the show. I've been in so many situations where I know I was key to a project, but the people around you will make you feel like you're replaceable, that you're not key. You know what I mean? That you're like do the opposite of like empowering you, in the sense where you really have to know that true to yourself. Because a lot of people around you will make you feel like it's not the case.
Right. Self-awareness is the key.
Self-awareness, but I think, you know, one thing that I've been really practicing more and more is meditation, stillness. You know the voice of truth. Sometimes you know when people are gassing you up, you gassing yourself up or whatever. You know when there's compromise. And so one of my things was, even as I said what I had to say, I didn't roll my eyes. I wasn't stomping out of there. I wasn't yelling. I was in compromise. I'm telling you what is best for the show. I spoke the language of value. I am what's best for the show. I can honestly tell you that if you decide to move forward with this show, it will not be as successful without me. And then I also had receipts, meaning like it was promised to me. So I want to know what changed. What haven't I done? Because you can check all that I've done. So when you just sort of speak, and it may not be comfortable for you, but it's right. And so this is what I'm willing to do. And I think just by speaking up for ourselves, you get to see where people really are. The last thing I'll say is, I've also learned, when you say where the compromise is, I think it's important, especially in my role as a showrunner and a leader, a visionary, you have to be able to, I always say, I speak many languages, but I only speak English. So it is my job to help communicate, and it can be tiring at times, but the way you talk to executives is one way, the way you talk to the actors is another, the way you talk to the writers, the way you talk to the crew. It's part of, in the role, to galvanize everybody and empower them to that vision. And when you sort of build that around you, it becomes in some cases a no-brainer for the moment you're asking about, am I compromising? Am I making the wrong move or the right move? You'll know this is valuable. This is my value. This is what we said. And can I just get what's fair? And I think I can fight on fair.
I love that earlier you talked about how, you know, some of this advice came from like Keenan, Ivory Wayans, and how you mentioned, you know, even I saw you've posted on Instagram about the community, about being like how you got your job on Moesha and just kind of how the community is leaning on each other. And we all know that there's very few Black people in this industry. And one of the things I've loved is like, with all these shows coming back on Netflix, is seeing the credits and seeing how many recognizable names are in the credits of these shows that I didn't know them then, but I know these names now. Like, whether it's you being brought on to work on Moesha and seeing your name in those credits, or, you know, seeing, you know, knowing that Lena Waithe has spoken openly about her work with you on Girlfriends and how she was motivated and inspired by you. Seeing Kenya Barris's name all up and through the game. I was all like, wait a minute.
Every single.
I was like, what?
Listen.
And so it really looks like you've been fostered in, or you've even fostered your own community of Black creators. Was this intentional, or is this what survival looked like for you all, you know, is coming up?
It's legacy. You know, one of the beautiful things, especially about around the Moesha days and even the Sinbad days, the segregation of our programming created our sort of Hollywood HBCUs. You know what I'm saying? We only, there was very limited places for us to go. And you're just around that love. You're around that place to be. I think my Ralph Farquhar, Sarah Finney Johnson, and Vita Spears, they created a place for me to learn. You know, I learned how to make TV. They weren't selfish in hoarding the skill set of how to do this. They opened the doors. And anytime they opened a door, y'all, I was there doing the most. Like, what do you need? I was always, and I think that's important. I became the go-to person. But the benefit is, I learned how to make the sausage. I am so, you know, I wasn't always, although it was a lot of fun and parties and things of that nature, but I was there to learn and absorb how to do this. And so I witnessed my mentors pulling up, lifting as they climbed. They hired Black people. They wanted us there. You know what I'm saying? They looked for us. They had to teach sometimes as they were being hired. There was a teaching course because we didn't have the experience. The doors weren't always open for us. So that is important to me. I'm connected to a link. And so how do you pay that forward? How do you say thank you? People want to use thank you a lot, but how do you say thank you is you pass that forward. And that's what I did to Kenya. That's what I did to Kenny Smith, Karen Gist, Lena Waithe, Prentice Penny. I'm so proud of all of them. I think they all have overall deals. Jenny Rice. All of those came through and taught them how to make the sausage, and also gave them place to be, have a voice, make mistakes, and learn from them and grow. And that's how we move forward.
I mean, like Toni Morrison said, I always say it, the function of freedom is freeing someone else. So that's exactly what we have to do, and we have the responsibility to do. But you mentioned that working with Netflix would allow you the space to do what you do best, which includes painting portraits and murals of women. Talk to us about why this is so crucial to your work.
Black women, well, my muse are Black women, the marginalized, the invisible. We are not seen. Yet I see all the beauty in us. I mean, I was raised by this beauty and this complexity too. I mean, we're not perfect. I love the imperfections. In the Japanese culture, they have a term called wabi-sabi. And wabi-sabi is the beauty in imperfections. And I think, but we need to be seen, you know? And so I'm just trying to let people see us the best way I know how, and using using art and commercial art to expose us to ourselves as well as to a larger audience. So I'm just painting portraits, and like Girlfriends was my whole theory about that was, I just want to document our existence. This is what we were thinking and doing in the turn of the century. This is what we were saying, how we were saying it, how we were doing it. So imagine, I feel like I've only scratched the surface. I think my it's interesting, my vision of my storytelling, I reached with Love Is. I think when I first got off the boat into Hollywood, that's how I saw in my head. That's how things looked in my head. I also knew I didn't know how to make that show just yet. Also, they weren't buying that show then, right? So right. So now that I know how to make what is in my head and at the level of quality and expression that I want, teaming up with Netflix, they believe in that same quality of expression. They have the resources, they have the reach, and they have the attraction to the type of stars and talent I want to work with. Like, one funny story I always love to tell, I had Regina King's picture on my wall because she was Joan. That was like the muse for Joan. So when it was time for Joan to get cast, and I was like, "What did Regina call back? Did Regina call back?" But this is at a time when every other week in the trays, UPN may not make it. So of course Regina's not calling back, right? This is, she's all, she is done, you know, Boys in the Hood, Tutu Set, this girl. Yeah, that's cute. And it's funny because we laugh about it now. But it's fun that I'm able to tell her that story, right? And so can attract that kind of talent. Netflix, I'm just excited about the resources we'll be able to partner together and what we'll be able to do in that parity, in that shared vision of making hits globally. So I'm excited.
Yeah, and you mentioned that's a very global audience, and you've had this, you know, you've had this history of launching and, you know, kind of even reviving networks with your shows, whether it was Moesha, I mean, whether it was Girlfriends in UPN or The Game in CW and Be Mary Jane with BET, and now here you are at Netflix. And I think the difference to me is a little bit how quintessentially Black those other networks are versus Netflix, which is, well, we're making it very Black every day, and I'm glad you're here to join us. But, like, you know, like, it is very global. It's a global international platform.
Our culture is global. Let's be honest. Black culture is a global franchise, and we've been saying that forever, and now there's a measurement to prove it. I knew that Girlfriends and Being Mary Jane was like, killing it. You just from the grassroots reports that over in the continent of Africa, that it in places like Nigeria and Ghana and South Africa, it was hot, it was lit, or in the diaspora in London. And I'm like, but you know, where are the metrics? Where are the metrics? Yeah. I know it's a global audience. And so I also have a goal that our human story is a global one, which I know, and here's an opportunity to prove that. And so I'm excited about that too. But it's interesting launching, and thank you for acknowledging that the launching of those networks, and although I'm very, 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 very proud of either like launching or being a part of a launch or a relaunch or a reimagining, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of work. You got to make it. You got to teach. It's a lot. So to come in and just have the resources, I'm excited. I'm really excited about what the opportunity presents itself. It's like walking into a studio and having all the paints, all different size canvases I want. I got light. I got a studio. You know what I'm saying? You're not working out the back of your car or something. You're just like, So I'm excited about, you know, what's possible. Yeah. And then also reaching that point, like the love is to be I directed, wrote, produced that and have such a full expression and to get that out at a time now that I'm about to launch into this deal or in this deal is exciting as well. Like where my voice is.
Yes. And that speaks to, I'm glad you brought up about where your voice is, because I was really just thinking about the trajectory of your career, even just as you grow in the world and grow as a woman, because it dawned on me that you were literally my age when you created Girlfriends, which makes me feel like I...
Stress.
I mean, it felt like a personal attack. I said, she was 30. I'm 30 now. No.
Don't you do that to yourself.
I know. This is not about that. This is about you. But I don't even say that to guilt you. But like, to me, it also like, you know, you were in your 30s and that shaped those characters and that narrative and that outlook on love, life. And, you know, like you said, trying to have it all. And then, you know, in your 40s with Being Mary Jane and then Love Is right before you hit 50, which you are now. And I'm wondering even like how you think your outlook may on life and just everything you, the wisdom you've acquired now as a 50-year-old woman, when it comes to the new worlds and the new women that you're going to create and the new narratives, how does like your outlook on life now at 50, is that, do you see how that's going to impact your voice at all?
It is. I bring myself to my work. I mean, that is very true. And my feelings and my, you know, perspective, I'm watching a lot about what's happening in our world. You know what I'm saying? You know, if you notice too, one of the subjects I talk a lot about throughout a lot of the program is class. It's not just race that I talk about or from the lens of Black people, but we're so disparate in our experience in the world and also to each other. That is a continuum. I think how the latest civil rights movement is going to impact us. You know, the movements. I actually find your generation beautiful and challenging in a lot of ways and inspired by, you know, finding that different language and rhythm. We're still experiencing the same things. Like you're talking about being 30 and where are you in your career of success, right? I was having the same conversation. You know what I'm saying? I was having the same conversation with myself, you know, but the way we're experiencing it, the way we talk about it, the way we move through it, the way circumstances are in society, the dismantling of institutions means there's new rules. So what does that mean? And how does that have effect? So I think I just spoke about, you know, having the luxury of a little space and the right resources to think and be reflective and sort of pull those through lines through, and then also attract those new voices who have a lot to say. I remember being young Mara in the writer's room, having a lot to say, wondering when I can say it, you know what I'm saying, to really help and really feel like I'm really helping and impacting the show. I remember, well, here's a fun story. So I used to pitch, Moesha and Kim, I was like, their friendship has to take a hit. It's like, it's too, there was a time like I just felt like it was a little too, everything is easy. And so one of the fights that I was pitching was, I think Moesha's gonna call Kim a bitch or somebody's gonna call somebody a bitch. I remember that. And I remember my mentors, they were like, and the showrunners, they were like, no, that's not gonna happen in my show. And you know what? And I was a little frustrated because I really thought I was trying to be sort of cutting edge and this is what's happening. This is how we talk to each other. This is how it is, whether right or wrong, let's put it on there and explore it, right? But they didn't want to, and I respect that. But one of the things Ralph used to always say to me, he would say, and I would pitch it a few times because I was passionate. So then they would say, so a way to shut me down nicely and I could have my dignity was, he would say, save it for your pilot. And I knew it was a self-deprecating, you know, and so I'm like, it was a way to laugh and kind of sink back into your seat and rethink. But then I started, it's like, wait, I am going to save it for my pilot. And I started writing down all the things that they didn't want to tell in their story, and that's perfectly fine. But that's what I want to say. I learned how to find what I wanted to say. And I'm not afraid to talk about those things. I'm not always saying everybody's right or everybody's wrong, but this is what's happening in culture and how can we examine it and give different points of view. And what I want to do is keep finding my voice right where I am, where I see the world, and invite those new voices to challenge me. You know what I'm saying? So that we are having a really rich conversation with the audience through a hit show.
Yeah. I think in order to be a visionary, you have to be a master learner. And I think that's what you are. And I've always wanted to know, through years, of course, of learning and experiencing, I think you're still going to learn past 50, past 60, past 70. You're going to continue to learn. But I always wanted to know this about you as the person, the human. What are you still trying to prove to yourself?
Dude, I didn't know he was going to therapy.
Hey, we get deep. This is girlfriend talk.
That was a good. What am I still trying to prove to myself that I don't have anything to prove? Right where I am, literally right now, my practice and my learning is receiving what I have manifested and co-created with God.
Yeah.
And I think that part is huge, because that's a letting go. That's a control issue. That's all the things that have driven me, and I can mark as a way to be successful. But I think right now it's just to be.
Right. Because at 30s, in my 30s, we romanticize like having it all together and when that will be. And I know there's a lot of pressure. This could be my therapy session. I don't know. But because it's amplified through quarantine, we're like, you have to have it all together for 30.
No, and you don't.
I have to.
Tell her. I tell her. I'm 30. I've been 30 for like 6 months. I keep telling. We don't have it all together. I'm very new into it, so my advice goes above and overhead. I feel like, right, Mara, you're a better person.
Having Mara say that, right, where she said, you know, when you decide, you have nothing to prove.
You know what I want to pass on to the next generation, and if you could learn it faster than I did, I really want you to practice stillness, meditation, and yoga, which is an inward exploration. I think what we've experienced all the way up until now is that success and everything we need is outside of self. Having material things are fun and good, and try and understand that. You know what I'm saying? So when you go buy something, buy the quality, buy, plot and plan for that thing you want. Enjoy the journey to that thing you want. But really what I would love for you to do is go inward in your exploration. If you could practice and harness that and learn how to take 5 minutes out of your day just to sit still for a second, to hear yourself, you will get to where you're trying to go better. Because one of the things you may not be doing is being clear with what you want. You may not be clear in your vision. You might be borrowing from so many different, the influences you guys have in your generation versus mine is mind blowing. Like, you're getting hit with somebody else's vision of themselves or of the world. And when do you have the time to think about you or what it is you want? Like, we talked about family, you know, letting go of family dreams. But soon as you kind of deal with that, if you on Instagram for more than 5 minutes, or just anything, even the field that we're in that we love, that we're inspired by, but let that be an inspiration, not a guidepost. Your guidepost is inside, not outside. I believe, you know, I think I even said in Being Mary Jane, you don't have to tear down to build. I think sometimes, and some things you'll know if it's time to walk away. You understand that, but I think there may be some other ways to approach things. I think the first thing when I talk about going to self, I think we're such at odds with each other. I've seen a lot, and this would be one of my challenges for your generation. You guys want so much, and I understand it, and I have compassion for it, by the way. You want so much so quickly, you're not really able to focus on where you're at. You're gonna miss so much of your life, and you're gonna get to 50 and be like, I don't even remember what I did. I hope you don't do that. I hope you'll remember what you did, because you'll be present for the lessons and the blessings and the fun of it all, you know? And so I think that the willingness to do the work and understand the process, like I told you about my mentors, learning to make the sausage, cooking in the kitchen, like literally, I think all of us in this pandemic, we learned how to cook, or we cook better, or, you know, whatever, because that's what you had to do. And there's joy in that. That return to learning how to do that, there's joy there. So wherever you are, I would just say, be there.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mara, because listen, she gonna listen to you. She don't listen to me. So I'm happy about it. Okay, so we have two quick final questions. One is petty, so I'm gonna ask it real quick. And so it's not petty. It's more like a personal desire that I needed to know, because I had access to you today. Whose decision was it to make Tony mispronounce Jabari's name?
Oh, God!
Every time. I need to know, Mara. I need to know. Because it's funny, and everybody's about to be talking about it on Twitter.
Juju Bean is hilarious. Yeah.
That was one of the greatest joys. And when there were days, like, say if I had to do phone calls and the writers were waiting on me for something, they would just, they would pass the time by writing down all the J words Tony could say. And sometimes just to warm up the room, we would just have it. It was just, To be honest, I don't know whose idea it was. I don't know if it was my own. It was such a collective by the end of it. It was just so much fun. It was one of the most joyous parts of just... And Jill, did she slay that every time? I mean, like,
every time. Straight face.
From the heart. She was speaking just from
like,
the soul.
And she would look like, ain't that your name? That's your name, right?
Like, it wasn't a joke. Not a like, smile.
Not a smile. Just, she killed
Jabuki,
that.
What?
Jabuki, Juju Bean.
Jabari, huh? What? Juju Bean? Yeah.
Oh my god, that was so much fun, but I don't remember. I wanted anyway. We're gonna say that's the collective. That's the collective writers.
That's the
room.
Collective.
Yeah,
amazing.
And I'll let Scotty take our very last question because we like to end on a positive note always.
Oh, this is positive. The whole thing. Thank you, ladies. Oh,
yes,
of course. What is bringing you joy right now?
What is bringing me joy? Like that list is long. I knew about my privilege, my hard-earned privilege. I did work for this. I worked very hard.
Talk about it.
But it makes my heart feel more compassion to figure out how to help more. I you know what I'm saying? And so I think even when you say joy, I do think how can I give back? And first it starts with self. And that is, and I really have been yoga. And meditation has given me great joy, and I want to give that back. It has been a piece that I have not consistently done in my life until quarantine, and I can't tell you how wonderful that was. I think the giving back, cooking dinners for my children, sitting at the dinner table, that actually brings me great joy. How much we rush through. Oh, not that I never had dinners with my kids, but the consistent level. Yeah. I'm lighting candles. Yeah. I put candles up. I put flowers up. Like I just, obviously my deal at Netflix is bringing me joy. You know what I'm saying?
That, hey,
let me just be real about that. You know what I'm saying?
Listen, bags and joy. When you can get both at the same time, we love to see it.
I need to really have something that I really wanted and it manifest. I'm happy and proud of that. My family brings me joy. And then also, I'm also very inspired by the movement that we're in because I do think that it is making those of us who maybe were a little passive or not as involved as we should be. Here's an easier way to say it. The good guys have got to put in more work. The thing I love about the bad guys, they are consistent. They know urgency and consistency very well. The good people are rising and they're just like, no. And that brings me joy to see us, humanity, fight back against evil. Because that's like what we're dealing with. We are figuring out how to fight back. Even you asking the question is a reminder that there's so much more for us to fight for. That brings me joy. And then when I do give back, I mean, I'm finding more joy because it's so intentional in the fight for humanity. I feel like I'm in a Star Wars movie, like good and evil. Like it's like I want to, I really want to be, I want to give more than I have taken from this life experience. And every day that I do that, that brings me joy and gives me hope for the next day.
Thank you, Mara. That was beautiful.
Thank you so much.
And joy is an act of resistance. So you just standing in your joy is rebellious. And, you know, it's blackness altogether. So thank you so much, Mara, for sitting with us, talking to us. Oh, this has been so great.
This is such a good, I feel like bomb. Like, you know, right. Like you pour like, just like shea butter all over the conversation. Right. I loved it.
It was beautiful. Beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you for, I wouldn't be here without you, meaning we need a conversation. I appreciate the conversation we've had through the work and I appreciate today's conversation. It was in the celebration of this 20th anniversary and the celebration of this new deal. This was a beautiful conversation to have and be a part of my memory. Being here with you was really lovely.
All right, now is the time where we put y'all on to things we enjoy in hopes that you can enjoy it too. Sylvia, what are you recommending this week?
Scotty, I gotta be honest, I'm about to be real black. This is about to be a real black
moment. You're
real
moment. Black then.
A real black ass recommendation because during the aforementioned Achicella that was the Gladys and Patty verses, I, like a lot of my African-American brothers and sisters, ordered soul food to get the full experience while watching. You know, it just felt right to have greens, mac and cheese, something fried while watching Patty and Gladys. I think I peaked, like the blackness peaked. And, you know, with that kind of cuisine comes a favorite condiment of our people, which is hot sauce. Hot sauce is key to most soul food dinners. And I discovered a new hot sauce, which, but a lot of people know, we stick to our hot sauces more than we stick to our relationships. Like, when you find a good hot sauce, it's like find a good man. You hold on to it. You don't really change your ways. Sweet Baby Ray's. A lot of y'all know them for their barbecue sauce. We use their barbecue. Mm-hmm. They have a new hot sauce. And baby, that's why it's called Sweet Baby Ray's, because that thing said it makes you say, Sweet Baby! That Sweet Baby Ray's hot sauce on my mac and cheese and fried catfish just really, it really just took me over the edge, because I am usually, I know usually it's like people are very like, either they're a Crystal's or they're like a Frank's, you know, the regular Tabasco. There's a lot of different varieties and people usually have their allegiances regionally. Sweet Baby Ray's new hot sauces might now be my number one. And I have no apologies for it, but I just really wanted to make sure that y'all knew that it exists, that it's out there in the stores, able for you to go try it out. because now that I know, I had to sing it from the mountaintop that there is a new hot sauce in town and she's a bad bitch coming for your faves.
I am going, this is a safe space because I've made it one and you've made it one.
Oh God.
I'm gonna come clean right now and say that I just got put on to hot sauce as a whole, period. Yes.
When you say just got put on.
Just got put on like a month ago.
What you mean by like you just decided to try it out? Cause I know your family been having hot sauce. I know your family.
No, my family got hot sauce. Yes, they're Caribbean. They love spicy shit. I'm not a big fan of spicy shit. I'm not a fan of hot shit. How am I going to enjoy this meal when there is something burning in my mouth?
Well, I don't want that kind of hot sauce either. I'm not that level either. So I like a flavorful hot sauce.
I wasn't exposed to the flavored hot sauce. So there is this thing called Frank's.
Yes, that's hot my sauce. That's the one that just is my you said. Is my favorite.
And I sprinkled a little bit.
Would you put it on
a chicken wing?
On a chicken wing. Of course it was a chicken wing.
And I said, "Wow." Wow. I think I'm an adult now. And so that's the reason why I'm going to try this Sweet Baby Ray's.
Yeah, so we're in line.
Yeah, okay.
So we're in step with our hot sauce taste then. Because if you like Frank's was my nigga. Like, Frank has been in every home I've had, you know what I mean? But if you ain't tried a little Frank's, or in this case, like I said, Sweet Baby Ray's hot sauce on a mac and cheese, on a protein, a fried protein, baby, you haven't lived. You haven't lived. And I just want to congratulate you, Scotty, for unlocking a new level of blackness in your life.
Of blackness. Absolutely.
I can't believe.
Because there are a lot of unlocked levels that I cannot share right now.
Oh my
because
God.
I do not want this show to be boycotted. But
this is a secret black girl confession right here. A black
this
girl
is
confession.
For real. And I need y'all not to take it to Twitter.
They're going to take it
leave
to Twitter.
It
you
here.
Know they ain't. I'm gonna, they're like our cousins. They can't keep it to themselves. They're going to take it to the Twitter streets.
Yeah. So, you know, but I'm enjoying it now. And thank you.
You've come on the internet.
I'm having
a good
time.
Matters. And that's what matters most, is that you have arrived at the proper destination.
Yes. So, absolutely, Sylvia, thank you for the recommendation.
Yeah, go get it while it's hot, kids. Go get it while it's hot, blacks. I promise you, it's lovely. Mm. So, that's my black ass recommendation for today. Scotty, what are you putting the people on to this week?
Hoo-wee, child. I bought black girl sunscreen. And I've been looking over. It's that's the name of it. Black Girls Sunscreen.
That's why I'm laughing though. I think I saw it on your IG.
All over the world for a sunscreen that doesn't make me look like I have
ash
foundation on. Right. Foundation that are three shades lighter than me on. It dries quickly and completely. It does not make me oily at all.
Ooh.
And yes, and like I don't need to reapply.
What?
Like I wore it all day. I had a good time. It was sheer. It was perfect. Like it wasn't heavy. I just was just so happy to have something that was light mm-hmm. on my face that came with SPF, because it's very important, yes, for Black people to wear sunscreen.
It
please,
is. Every
Black
day. People don't start Do not skip with the that whole step. Especially because
Jesus,
people think it's
please.
Just about the skin cancer stuff or the melanin blocks that, but also we
yes.
deal with hyperpigmentation, and nobody deals mm-hmm. with dark spots more than Black women. And y'all know that sunblock is supposed to prevent your dark spots and your skin colors from getting even more discolored from each other. And that's really mm-hmm. the key note that should make all of us mm-hmm. run to the hills to get SPF, because dark spots are my number one issue when it comes to my skin. And I am so glad. Like, when I found out it was because I was walking around without fucking sunscreen on, I was like, what? So, yeah, sorry.
All right. It gives you a glow. It's clear. Again, like, I am very happy. I'm super satisfied. And it's only been a few days. And from what I can tell, you know, people have been telling me that it really helped with their hyperpigmentation.
Oh, nice.
Quickly, too, like, just in a jiffy. And I haven't used jiffy in a while.
Wow.
So, yeah, I love that. I'm going to. And it's also made by a Black woman. So
we love that. And it better be with that name. I love that the
Hello.
Name is straight
well,
to the
shit,
point.
We
marketing.
Don't know.
I know, because Lord knows they will give us an African pride and be like, that Black owned. I don't know.
You know what's crazy? I was running on a treadmill today,
uh-huh.
and I did 5 miles. And you know,
wow.
on the treadmill where they have the video where you can imagine running.
Oh, okay.
Wherever
no, I don't,
they place
because
you,
I don't run on
right?
a treadmill, but sure.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
There's white people. There's, you know, more white people who look at you running.
Oh,
you're
wow.
running past a bunch of white people. Yeah, it's crazy. And then I bump into this white person with who has dreadlocks, a dreadlock wig, and it's a group of them. I have to write a letter to Life Fitness.
What?
Because what?
What? What kind of hell simulation were you in? You can't even,
almost,
wait, you can't even run on a treadmill without being fucking.
No, it's crazy. I
without
was so
dealing
triggered.
With.
In fact, I was like, hold on, I almost tripped over my foot. So I was like, wait, who is this group of white people who are dressed as Bob Marley? Like, it was crazy. It was nuts. And I was like,
so you have to deal with cultural appropriation on the digital treadmill while working out.
Nigga,
you can't even work out in peace.
A simulation, nigga.
A simulation. You were attacked with racism from the confines of your own home gym.
Nigga,
that's some wild shit
right
there.
Right.
They couldn't even just hire some real Black people with locks to run by?
No. No, no, there's not a Black person in there. And all I wanted was some green pastures and some clouds. Just give
and
me
they
those
gave
things
you,
and
they
fine.
Gave you cultural appropriation
they gave
and racism.
White people in dread.
That's
and
wild.
And with the Jamaican colors on. I was like,
shut,
this
shut
guys,
your mouth right
oh,
now.
I have
was
to
it
do
Miley
it.
Cyrus?
The next time I do, child, it could have been. I just know for a fact. I'm going to take a picture of it next time whenever
I
decide
yes, please.
To motivate myself to do 5 miles. But we're going to have a talk Life Fitness.
My mind is blown.
My mind is awesome.
Well, that's a different
it's
kind
awesome.
Of putting us on to some fuck shit is what you did just then. And I am good to
run,
know.
Run on a different
trigger warning. Trigger
now.
Warning if you run
that's
on that
crazy.
Website. That's crazy.
Anyway, that's what I'm putting you on to. Black Girl Sunscreen.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for that. All right. That's our show. Thank you all for tuning in.
Our show is a production of Pineapple Street Studios in partnership with Netflix and Strong Black Lead. Shout out to our team. Executive producers are Agarenish Ashagre and Jasmine Lawson. Our lead producer is Jess Jupiter, and our music is by Amanda Jones. Special thanks to Max Linsky and Jenna Weiss-Berman.
Make sure you share your thoughts with us on the episode using the hashtag OKNowListen. We love hearing what y'all have to say. And follow Strong Black Lead on the socials at Strong Black Lead. And follow us too. I'm at Sylvia O'Bell.
And I'm at Scotty Beam, unless it's about hot sauce. I'm at nothing.
Until next time, folks, stay blessed.